Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona. Now, if you'd like to contact the Hour of the Time, we do so by writing Hour of the Time, or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942. And my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, that's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now tonight we're going into episode 11 of our Minuteman series, and a bunch more good information for you. But I want to stress some announcements first. Our Sedona package, the 4-DVD set, what many have said was one of Bill's best presentations, professionally produced and edited from the original video into digital format, 4 DVDs in a box set. We now have that available. The Sedona set, for all 4 DVDs, is only $25 postage paid donation. That is cheap, ladies and gentlemen. Just look around for what 4 DVDs go for elsewhere. And for you Hot Club members, you can enter your code, or if you want to mail it in, just do the math yourself. But it's real simple, Hot Club members, $15 postage paid. Because always you get bonuses on materials for being a continual support member. I would suggest you get this, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going to be releasing something new constantly now, is our plan, hopefully once a month. And as we introduce the new one and successfully do so, the older one, because these are introductory type prices, will likely go up to pay for the cost of the next one. We got to kind of build it up like that. So I would suggest you get on it. We will hold those prices, though, for at least a month. Now, also, one of our new projects is internet television. I suggest you check it out. We had originally scheduled 2 and 5 p.m., 2 and 5 o'clock Pacific time. That's Pacific time, 2 and 5, originally Mondays and Fridays. It's still Mondays and Fridays, but we're moving 2 to 6 instead. So 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock. You have 2 chances on Monday, 2 chances on Friday to see it. Each week will be the same broadcast. It gives you 4 shots of viewing it. This week is the Herb Walks with David Christopher from the School of Natural Healing from last year's conference. It's just a small segment because we had David for an entire 9-hour day there. Inside and indoor and outdoor activities. Next week, again, Monday and Friday, 2 and 6 p.m. Pacific time, will be the grave site, building the memorial. A lot of the pictures, a lot of people have wanted to see, and obviously not everybody can come out to the site and see it. So we're doing that for next week's broadcast. I think you'll like it, and like I said before, these people that make these things, these opportunities available to you. It's not just us at Hour of the Time. It's James at Christian Media. It's Monty at Radio Free Vermont. Drop them a note, a quick email, a one-liner, what have you. If Leave a phone message, something. Let them know you appreciate their efforts. Okay? Because we wouldn't be out there if it wasn't for them too. So I want you to look at those things. And when you're on our website as well, hourofthetime.com, remember we are listener supported. That's why you don't hear BS, overpriced corporate advertising on our show. We're not trying to hawk you overpriced coins. We're not trying to sell you miracle cures or magic oil additives or electronic banking schemes and investments like so many of the other networks. We keep independent so we can say and do what needs to be said and done without any conflicting interests getting on our way or gagging us. So we are listener supported. Keep that in mind. You can donate for broadcasts like this wonderful series. Wait till it's completed, which will be shortly. And with some other bonus broadcasts from the past, like my tactics series, psychological warfare series, tacked on, we'll have a special package MP3 price. We're going to really have that one down so you can get it. And keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, just because it's we're making a special opportunity for you to put it in the hands of more people. But remember, when you get that special offer and you receive that, that doesn't mean you run around and make 100 pirate copies and give it to all your friends. Hopefully have enough respect for us and for the work to get donations for it and mail them in. If you make 15 copies for friends, I don't care. But why don't, you know, mail us in a donation for that. For instance, ladies and gentlemen, we have one very nice young man who contacted me and said that him and a group of friends like to listen to the broadcast. I said, great. So we made arrangements, and I have no problem with it. I'm not shipping a disc and postage and a padded envelope and a case and time. So what we do is they ordered at the regular donation price and the specials included. They always get the regular price anybody else does. And then him and a group of five friends, when he receives it, he makes copies for the other five. And then they give me 50% donation and just mail it in. And that works out good. I'm not having to deal with those other five requests. They're getting something for another 50% off. And it works out for everybody. Because that gentleman had integrity and was honest. Because remember, we are listener supported. So when you throw it all over the place and people just take it for granted, it loses a lot of its value and meaning. And perfect example is if you go out and have some really cool pamphlet, you know, you think this thing is really going to work to save America or get something built or whatever, let's say in your hometown. It's been proven in marketing studies and common sense and just usage and experience has taught me, when you just give someone something for free, I've done it a million times. Have a free Veritas. Check out this CD. They usually don't even pay attention to it. But if for the same CD you say, hey, cough up $5, buddy, they almost always will take time to listen to it. Because they've got something invested now in it. Oftentimes, freebies just get treated like freebies. Eventually thrown away, stacked up with the rest of the goodies, and not used. So there's practical considerations besides moral considerations here for our work. Now, we're going, like I say, after the musical break, go into episode 11 of our Minuteman series today on operations planning or operational planning. We briefly touched on planning yesterday, so we'll go into a recap after the musical break of the last broadcast, broadcast 10, which was leadership and initial phases of planning, and today go into more extensive details. Alrighty, so stay tuned after this musical break for some more exciting information in Minuteman Part 11. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. Now, for recap, episode 10, for a little bit, we finished up the leadership phases and, of course, skipped all the training and exercises because only serious people get to find out about that. And then got into the planning, and we covered it's the importance of planning and some of the key areas to begin considering. Contingency plans, rehearsals, exploitation of vulnerabilities, infiltration, and we just got onto surprise, and I didn't feel it appropriate to continue on. So I'll recap surprise, and we'll move on. Now, it's been proven throughout history of unconventional warfare that guerrilla forces, or anyone for that sake, and experts have studied this in the war colleges, rarely will you actually surprise a well-trained enemy through some single act, some single motion or operation. And I gave the examples like catching them all asleep all at once in the middle of the night. It's not going to happen. So, always remain fluid with the other topics we covered in the previous broadcast, as well as more we're going to go into, and that's taking and retaining the initiative. And I told you that there was a three-phase plan, or surprises could be conducted based on the three phases of an operation. So let's go into those. Phase 1, ladies and gentlemen, initiate action against the enemy. 2, allow the enemy to fully develop his reaction. And 3, when the enemy's entire attention is devoted to the reaction, take advantage of his deployment and deliver a surprise counterattack. Now, using this and the other techniques we've taught, think about it this way. Let's say the enemy's in an installation with prepared defenses. And we talked about probing to see how they react, etc. Let's say they're in an installation. It doesn't have to be a series of buildings in a city. It can be a base camp. Or they could have taken a building and a parking garage in some major metropolitan area. And they've got prepared defenses. And its reaction can be foreseen through probing intelligence and common sense. One tactic that's been used successfully is to send a provocation force, to, let's say, within 3-4 miles of the enemy and set up a dummy bivouac site. And then to draw attention to themselves, the guerrilla bands have sent patrols, which after encountering the enemy, retreat towards the bivouac. Now the enemy troops react. There's your reaction part. Develop their reaction. They react and chase full speed, believing them to be the only force. Then the remaining elements surprise with an ambush. Now the principles here, ladies and gentlemen, you have to consider. It's not normally possible to surprise and defeat well-trained and well-prepared enemy troops or well-embedded agent provocateurs, enemies domestic. But by diverting their attention to a false target, they can be made vulnerable to attack and ambush. Again, simply refer to the nightly news. And it will happen here, ladies and gentlemen. And it's up to you, the American people, to defend this country and our freedoms, and restore a constitutional republican form of government, not our overstretched and overstressed and strained military. It's going to be on your shoulders. The Viet Cong used this extensively against us when they would use a small force to attack a village while a large force awaited an ambush. The mobile reaction troops would rush to the rescue of the village and be ambushed and suffer casualties. Plus, the enemy gained incredible amounts of intelligence information observing the speed of the reactionary force, the timing, the size, the support it had. Uncertainty is one of the key elements of a surprise attack. And I'm going to give you some examples of that. We touched on Squarzini yesterday. Well, he had found that even well-trained troops are vulnerable for a short time to direct surprise attack if the attack force can create a condition of uncertainty and confusion amongst the enemy. And in a raid of this type, the attack carried out by Minutemen on the enemy only needs a small time frame, a little small window of opportunity to take advantage of the confusion. In the Gran Sasso raid, for example, Squarzini's troops were briefed to emphasize speed and timing. He calculated that only 3 minutes of hesitation on the part of the defenders would allow his forces to gain the advantages and secure the target. To achieve the hesitation and confusion, a man in the uniform of an Italian general was used as a member of the raiding party. His presence and his shouting of orders distracted and confused the Italian guards long enough so that the garrison was taken without a shot being fired. And it's been done since America's beginnings, ladies and gentlemen. And let's look at World War II, another example from there. A Danish sabotage team, this one's neat and real, go check it out. A Danish sabotage team informed a factory security force of an expected sabotage raid on the installation. Then the Danish sabotage team sent in people in regular police uniforms and entered the factory on the pretext of being reinforcement guards. They quickly assembled the entire guarding force of the enemy for an emergency briefing and then disarmed and detained them and seized the whole factory. Well-trained soldiers, as we have stressed, ladies and gentlemen, are not likely to be surprised or caught off guard when faced with conventional situations. But in situations so uncertain or so unusual that they do not have a prepared response, they can be confused into inaction. This inaction can be exploited, or soldiers can be made to follow the orders and direction of someone who appears to have authority. Another category to consider is the deception diversion category. And to cover a major attack, obviously, various means of deception diversion are used. Sometimes, reinforcements or protective forces are distracted by the freedom fighters by attacking other locations or assembling large crowds simply. In Malaya, for instance, several attacks were made, and this was a continual thing. A small attack would be made in withdrawals on purpose, and they were used to make the enemy believe that an attacking force had been driven away. Then a sudden and a legitimate large attack caught the defenders off guard. Doing the reports, checking on casualties, checking for damage, restocking. One of the areas that we discussed, this is new by the way, I mean discussed by giving you highlights of main points, harassment and provocation. Look at the news any given night, ladies and gentlemen. Look throughout history. Continuous harassments by hit-and-run attacks on distant villages can fatigue and reduce the morale of well-trained mobile reaction troops. They get tired of constantly up and moving somewhere else. They wear out physically and mentally. They exhaust supplies, energy, food, water, gas, ammunition, time. Told you about the communist manuals used against us. And we need to use them right back on them. The Viet Minh manual stated, "We resort to diversionary and harassing attacks in order to disturb and wear out the enemy. We encircle and split up his positions. We disrupt his lines of communication in order to make him come out to repair them, and then we attack him. In the course of battle, we give the impression that we are forced to withdraw so that the enemy takes up the pursuit and reaches our positions where we wipe him out. We use stratagems and provocations to lead him on. End quote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, another factor to consider is the human factor. In planning raids against an enemy, whether it's the domestic enemy, the agent provocateurs who've now organized and banded for the strike, along with the support of a foreign invasion of the same country or a similar ally, certain human factors before and when planning the raids or attacks are given special consideration. The Minuteman, the American citizen fighting for our country and our freedoms, has a greater chance for success if the government, the enemy government morale is low, or if the enemy forces are overconfident or alone with no available assistance. That means service, supply, and support, the three S's. Situational factors such as time of day are also significant. For instance, at night, you have a natural cover to prepare for a dawn attack. Adverse weather that you may be used to because you live there. Or being able to read the weather ahead of time because you're from that area. Heavy rain, fog, provides an excellent opportunity for an outside force to be attacked. And significant dates to them. For the enemy force, a holiday, a particular time off phase that you've gathered through observation intelligence, celebrations, paydays, disbursement of materials, that all catches the enemy force at a psychological disadvantage. Now, tactical considerations. All things being equal, the smaller the team, the greater the security. And we talked about this in past episodes and other, in reference to other things as well. Small teams are selected to carry out generally ambushes or raids because it's impossible to anticipate all circumstances, so each man must be fully briefed on the mission's goals and be prepared to take initiative when appropriate. But because of security considerations, the less people you have to give a full briefing to with details and contingency plans, the better your security is. And the tactical principle, ladies and gentlemen, of temporary superiority of force predicates the entire concept of small unit actions. Chinese philosophers have said that strategy was 1 against 10 and tactics 10 against 1, that a small group can gain temporary advantage over any larger unit. So what the underground movement defending their country, their freedoms, their way of life, their constitution against an enemy needs to remember is what you lack in strength, you compensate for by the utilization of surprise and rapid action. Now, withdrawal plans is another area. It's just as important to have plans for a safe withdrawal. A standard part of any attack should be plans to use blocking units to hamper enemy reinforcements. During the withdrawal, these blocking units are used to ambush pursuing enemy forces and enable the main group to escape. During the withdrawal, casualties should be carried away to protect their identification and reduce intelligence leads for the enemy. And withdrawal should be made over a route different than that used to enter in order to avoid ambushes on your sails. In several foreign examples, either aiding us or people that we taught and aided. Blocking units were often set up to engage enemy reinforcements to destroy communications, such as bridges and radios, and to counterattack. They left the attack site last and engaged any counterforces. Their exfiltration routes, or escape routes, varied from the main bodies, and they varied from each other as groups, and they rendezvoused afterwards, after withdrawing from the area as a blocking or delaying force. Now, review of the mission. Because after completion, unit leaders should review the mission as to its success and failures, forwarding a detailed report to higher echelons of the underground bands. Also, often called an after-action report in the U.S. military, you can size up mistakes with the members and lower leaders in the units and bands and go over. We totally forgot this, guys, or why did you and you forget this even though we briefed you on it 50 times? You almost caused more casualties, or you didn't fulfill your part of the mission. So they're effective tools. Review of the mission. Intelligence. To plan and organize activities, ladies and gentlemen, underground Minuteman bands, freedom movements, require intelligence information. Effective evaluation of this intelligence makes it possible to establish priorities among the enemy targets, to expose, create, and take advantage of vulnerabilities. In planning psychological operations, intelligence can reveal attitudes, grievances, specific problems of a target group, so that propaganda themes and agitation slogans can be appropriately developed. Intelligence information regarding trails, tunnels, safe areas, the location and capability of enemy forces. It's essential for attack planning and for evasion operations and escape networks. You need to keep all these in mind, ladies and gentlemen. The best way to do it is become active. We'll give you details later on in the series. We're almost done. We'll get to that point. Donate for the broadcast. Help support us in our mission to safeguard our country, restore our constitutional republican form of government, and at the same time, rehearse, listen, study, take more notes than you could deny it, for instance. Organization, utterly important. Because one of the first tasks, ladies and gentlemen, of an underground movement is to establish an intelligence network. And I mean before the Cold War turns hot. The basic unit is a 3-to-7-man cell. For security reasons, cell members should never learn the real names or addresses of other members and never come in contact with them. Each agent should gather intelligence and transmit it to the cell or band leader through a courier, mail drop, etc. He never directly contacts other agents, and he contacts the cell leader only through intermediaries. The reason for this is that the lateral communications and coordination with other cells and Minuteman bands operate on this fail-safe principle, so that compromise of one unit does not jeopardize the security of the other units. Elaborate intelligence systems have been developed to carry on underground intelligence functions in the past. I'll give you a few examples here. In Vietnam, for instance, the Hanoi-based Central Research Agency directed Viet Cong intelligence. In its headquarters, there were 6 sections responsible for administration, cadres, communications, espionage, research, and training. These sections are responsible for specialized activities within their purview. For instance, the research section has subsections that deal with political, economic, and military affairs, each of them specialized and compartmentalize for security. This agency coordinates the recruiting, training, and dispatching of underground intelligence agents and teams, and did so throughout Vietnam, South Vietnam. For instance, a 19-year-old Vietnamese youth that was captured by government forces on his very first mission told a very characteristic tale of how they had been working. He had been recruited, he'd been given a special political training course, and dispatched to infiltrate student groups in South Vietnam. To do this, he was deposed as a defector, move in with relatives living in South Vietnam, and even enroll in school. But specifically, he was to observe fellow students, study their personalities, capabilities, and aspirations, collect biographical data on them, befriend potential recruits, and report regularly to his cell leader. If we take North Korea, for example, the North Korean intelligence net was set up by zones in the northern half of the Republic of Korea. And they offer an elaborate and detailed example, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at history of how an intelligence net operates in hostile environments. Its mission was simply to feel the pulse of the people. The net consisted of 3 member units. 3 or more of these units covered a district, and 10 or more units a province. Before being accepted, every individual underwent a screening process. Each agent had appropriate identification papers, code devices, and maps indicating places in which to make contacts. While operating in South Korean Republic, he was to pretend to be a supporter of the government and to mingle with government sympathizers in the villages. Once accepted as such, he was to infiltrate political parties and military units to organize intelligence operations. The information targets assigned to these intelligence cells included 1, public opinion about the South Korean government, 2, attitudes of political parties, social organizations, and governmental agencies towards the public, 3, intelligence activities of the South Korean government, procedures of dispatching espionage agents, the name of people who were important in political and intellectual agencies, 4, intelligence on military units, 5, strategic intelligence on imports and exports, and 6, government and party strife. Procedures for the delivery of intelligence to districts and provinces were also prescribed. If necessary, messages were hidden on the person and destroyed if there was danger of capture. Code words were used to identify messengers, and security measures were devised to protect messengers and the intelligence they carried. The political security chief was responsible for protecting the families of agents so that captured agents would not, under coercion, compromise the network. And you may remember the FLN out of Algeria. They had a rudimentary but very effective network. It simply posted civilian auxiliaries to act as agents in the field. These auxiliaries were able to infiltrate French head villages, reconnoiter for guerrilla columns. They were able to provide to liaison intelligence officers of close units a steady flow of intelligence about such things as the number of French troops, type of armament, and probable targets. And ladies and gentlemen, you need to consider all these so you know how they're being used or will be used against you, how to effectively use them right back against enemies. Without that understanding, you cannot be an effective tool in defense or offense for our country and our freedoms. Now, we're going to take a musical break here, so that way I'm not gurgling water on the microphone. And return back with some more examples and information on planning. ladies and gentlemen. Again, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the hour of the time. Now, continuing on with tonight's broadcast, which is segment 11 of the Minuteman series. Let's get into the next section, which would be sources of intelligence information. That's sources. In typical underground operations, an intelligence screen of two perimeters, if you will, circular perimeters, is established around an area of operations. The outer perimeter usually consists of what's been termed innocents, old men, women, children, while the inner perimeter comprises members of the unit. When those allies in the outer perimeter spot, let's say an advancing enemy patrol, helicopters, supply lines, they alert the inner perimeter by a predetermined signal. And those in the inner perimeter in turn alert the unit. The Huks in Philippines, for example, depend upon villagers for intelligence information and improvised techniques to relay this information. They use it extensively, ladies and gentlemen. For instance, if enemy troops were approaching a village, a man chopping wood observed them, he would increase the rate of his swing. Then a woman who was ready to observe this gentleman working in the fields, whatever the thing might have been, unhook the horses off the plow, what have you. The woman, noticing the signal, would then place white and blue dresses side by side on a clothesline. Then other members who observed that, because that was their only job, they didn't have to see the whole train or the whole distance or territory, which might be impossible due to terrain. And these members of the security network would pass that warning on that a government enemy patrol was in the area. At night, they had a system of using light signals, such as an open window on a given side of the house. But the signals, the improvised signals, most important, ladies and gentlemen, the lesson here is they blended with the environment. They didn't shoot up a cluster flare or start squawking on a radio on an open network. In Malaya, rubber tappers relate intelligence through signals as well. Pieces of string hanging from trees or sticks leaning against trees indicated the presence or absence of enemy forces. In South Vietnam, the communist Viet Cong forces used against us an observation system to warn their forces of takeoff and possible impending raids of helicopters of ours. And in some cases even, underground echo chambers, tunnels, had been constructed to listen for approaching aircraft. Other agents watch for aircraft arriving in a target area, sound the alarm, and open fire as the helicopter or other aircraft descended. Women generally have been used heavily in the role of innocents in intelligence gathering because it's just that. They appear as innocents. And oftentimes because they can get jobs in military enemy installations or even in the homes of enemy personnel that they've seized and set up headquarters in as servants, secretaries. It's been used throughout history. Oftentimes, people in professions can have valuable information that is they gather just like performing the duties of their job. Jobs that require a lot of travel, truck drivers, excellent source, railroads, shipping. Give you an example of what the French had done once against Germans. They had a doctor as one of their underground freedom agents. He made house calls regularly within the German defense area, collecting pertinent information and passing it on to the net through prescriptions delivered to pharmacists. Along the coastlines, the French underground even organized a Pete, as in Pete Moss, collecting company, which, having access to geological maps, was able to plot the German defense installations and observe all the construction. A German innkeeper and a British agent conducted more successful networks and missions. There was an inn located on the canals near the Baltic Sea, and it was the favorite hangout of German submariners or submariners. The innkeeper made every visit of German submariners a big occasion, and he always talked the guests throughout the celebrations into signing the guest register before they departed to sea. He then delivered the register to a British agent who was able to send the name and departure time of every embarking submarine to higher echelons. Now, oftentimes the intelligence community adhered to, and Germans used it quite effectively against people, for instance, at the French air show, using our own Library of Congress before the onset of hostilities and walking right out with everything they needed for technologies that we already had and didn't even know it. Often they use the precept of the best way to hide something is to put it in plain sight. And other times they put what they consider small bits of information in plain sight as part of a public campaign, but when observed and gathered, they tell a story. There is a famous case in 1935 of German journalist Berthold Jacob. He shocked the whole entire German intelligence network and agencies by publishing a book about the German army, which was then, 1935, in the initial stage of Nazi rearmament, circumventing the Versailles Treaty. In his book, Jacob spelled out virtually every detail of the organization of Hitler's new army, the command structure, the personnel of the revived general staff, the army group commanders, the various military districts, the name of the 168 commanding generals, and their biographical sketches, end quote. That's as it was reported. Jacob had pieced together these scraps of information from obituary notices, wedding announcements, criminal reports, and other such journals and newspaper clippings. And he compiled a comprehensive picture of the growing German military establishment. And the German authorities, upon being totally uncovered by just a simple journalist gathering bits of information and publishing a book, they themselves even were so astonished that they called it themselves a masterful job of professional intelligence. And Hitler's own aide reported at the end of the investigation, quote, "This Jacob had no accomplice, my Führer, except our own military journals and the daily press," end quote. Here's another example. In a Japanese technical journal, it was published and revealed details of the new and secret, completely secret, we thought, American U-2 reconnaissance airplane. Of course, the article instantly raised questions in the United States as the possibility of a breach of security. But after investigation, it was revealed that the article was simply the result of a painstaking assembly of small items published in various U.S. journals. Now, looking at command structures, etc., ladies and gentlemen, in contrast to a highly decentralized underground intelligence organization, a band of Minutemen or guerrilla forces, freedom forces, might develop a highly sophisticated centralized intelligence organization. An example of this is the Viet Minh in Indochina, when in 1948, they organized the Quan Bao, the military intelligence, and it was to provide operation intelligence to its forces. The Quan Bao was responsible for the collection and coordination of all military intelligence. It was established as an elite corps and was made up of key party members selected on the basis of their physical, mental, and moral qualifications. The personnel selected then went through a 12-week training course which emphasized physical conditioning, self-defense, techniques of sensory perception and memory, background information on the French, reconnaissance and interrogation techniques, and methods of accurate and complete reporting and evaluation of incidents and situations. Special emphasis was placed on methods for obtaining prisoners. Units made up for this specific purpose had four subsections. A fire group, that is, to create confusion in the enemy ranks. B, a capture group to round up prisoners. C, a support group to assist in retention of prisoners and to watch for enemy reinforcements. And D, an escort group to take prisoners to an interrogation area. Various methods were employed to elicit information from the prisoners. And Viet Minh, the special units that is, rarely actually used physical torture. But they interrogated individuals for long periods, and at times when the prisoners resistance tended to be the lowest. Sarcasm and irony were often used to make the prisoner lose patience and their composure. In Viet Minh, agents sometimes disguised themselves as other prisoners and mingled with them in the very compound. At company and battalion levels, Trinsat locations were responsible for reconnaissance and security. In areas which were considered suspect, agents were assigned to keep the units supplied with information. They investigated areas of operation, reconnoitered possible ambush positions, and determined ingress and egress routes. After a combat mission, the agents led the troops back to the regrouping area, took over prisoners, and authorized the local civilians to return to their homes. Then a report of the operation, complete with numbers and tallies of casualties suffered and inflicted, weapons lost and captured, and evaluation of the unit's performance and mistakes in action, was made. In the camp areas and villages, agents maintained close surveillance over Viet Minh troops to guard against desertions and to ensure that troop behavior would not damage relations with the local population. These agents were responsible for the security of documents and automatic weapons. They also maintained perimeter lookout positions to warn of enemy aircraft and directed emergency evacuation procedures. The efficiency and scope of the Quan Bao were revealed through captured documents which contain highly detailed and accurate surveys of French troop dispositions, habits, and activities. Surveys of areas of French operations included terrain, trafficability for both vehicles and coolies, as well as loyalty and attitude estimates of nearby native populations. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can see the effectiveness of planning, operational planning, and how important it is and how history has proven that out. How to see when an operational plan is being developed by an enemy against you and develop one likewise against an enemy. This is all important information, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're paying heed because it's going to be needed in coming times. Now, my voice has about had it for this evening. So what I want to do is wrap up with some announcements and just go to music for the end, the last 2 or 3 minutes. Don't forget the new release of the Sedona speeches. The Sedona set is a 4-DVD set of what many said was one of Bill's best public engagements. 4 DVDs, professionally edited, in a box set for a release price, special release price that is, which is cheaper than anywhere else. Go look for 4-DVD box sets elsewhere. For non-Hot Club members, $25 postage paid donation. You can either mail that into the address, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925, or use this shopping cart at our website, hourofthetime.com, and simply go to shop and click there. If you get lost in all that, just go to the website and go to shop and hit shopping's main page, because it's also got a directory there to the DVDs and broadcast pages, etc. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is important because we are listener-supported, and it is a new release. No one's ever seen it, unless you attended that weekend. Hot Club members, simply enter in your Hot Club code to get your discount, or if you want to do it by mail, that's okay as well. It's only $15 postage paid donation. As always, Hot Club members get special benefits. Don't forget our new internet television project, Monday and Fridays, 2 and 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 2 and 6 p.m. Pacific Time. This week was the Herb Walks with David Christopher of the School of Natural Healing. Just a small segment of what went on indoors and outdoors of last year's classes at the conference. Next week's segments are what many of you have wanted to see or picture or get an idea for a long time now. And it's a 30-minute expose on the memorial, how it was built, what's there for Bill at his gravesite. That's next week, and just the same, Monday and Fridays, 2 and 6 p.m. You have 4 different chances to view it. Go to cmri.tv, charliemikeromeoindia.tv. And don't forget, while you're on our website, you really should partake in the conference. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you really should. Conference 2007, simply go to that page on our website, hourofthetime.com. Look at the details, and you'll see a lot of wonderful activities coming up and a lot of stuff that we just can't even put in the itinerary without it looking like a mess. And there's always the camaraderie and friendships and bonds that are made. Reunions with old friends, establishing new friends and allies from all over the country and from different countries even, ladies and gentlemen. And you have this unique opportunity because some people fell through or had plans change, and they were quite understandable. There's no grief towards any of them. Just things came up, and they've had to do a refund type thing, so they won't be attending, so it opens some chairs and seats up and spots in the conference. So check that out, ladies and gentlemen. You won't find a better deal, more information of this type, especially in one place, for a week straight, for this price especially. So I hope everybody had a wonderful week and has a wonderful weekend. And study what you've learned. And don't forget, if you need to rehearse this information and memorize it, put it to memory. And the best way to do that is to donate for the broadcast and rehearse them. And remember, when you share them with friends, make a special arrangement with me. I have no problem in doing that. Or if you just up and do it, consider the information and the usefulness and what you and maybe a group or band is getting, and can keep that in mind when you consider the overhead costs that we have. So I want to thank everybody again for tuning in. I hope everyone has a safe and a studious weekend, and talk to you again next week here on the Hour of the Time.